Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. I am your host, Bill Sickens. Joining me, Bill and Gretchen, my co-hosts. How are you doing today?
Hello there.
All right.
Glad to hear it. I can't believe Halloween is already coming up and what is 2 weeks away now? That is a little scary. I don't know what you guys have planned. We're going to be doing a haunted arcade because we've gotten all these arcade games donated that are working. And but I've got 2 weeks to prep for it, and I still have a pinball machine to rebuild the power supply and a few other things. So I'm a little stressed, but I think we'll make it.
Yeah, well, I have to now make deviled eggs because I'm going over to your place. So
that's true. Deviled eggs and maybe circuit boards. So, Bill, you guys have anything special in the plans this year?
Not this year.
Yeah.
We're going to be pretty safe.
Probably not the worst idea. I didn't get to do a party last year because I was, you know, and I'm not complaining, nor would anybody feel sorry for me for the reason, you know, having to take one for the team and go test out the jet suit. But, you know, we're going to get it this year. So, oh boy, we're going to have some more of that coming up too. All right. Well, we've got an interesting show for you this week. We are going to have Jessica Kearney on from Travelers Institute. She's been with us before a couple of times and has some absolutely amazing information regarding some of the things they're doing with the Travelers Institute. And this year, they're putting on some workshops with cybersecurity being the primary topic, with a workshop coming up in Tulsa, Oklahoma this week, which you can still go to if you would like to. We'll be getting to that in the second segment and having her answer some of your questions about what the topics are going to be. So what do we have in the news this week?
All right. Oldest mummified remains discovered in Southeast Asia. So that's interesting.
Oh, that's interesting. I, you know, find it as they do a lot more of these type of investigations and archaeology and so on, that it seems to keep changing the timeline of what we know and what we can prove. These go back 12,000 years, and as you said, it's the oldest known mummies, and this is a practice that was done basically throughout human existence, off and on by different cultures for religious and spiritual reasons and that type of thing, and it's not something that's a thing of the past either. Still being done today in different parts of the world, and what it does allow is for scientists to be able to study a lot of details about bodies that they wouldn't be able to find. Now, Bill, you know a little bit more about archaeology than I do. What's your feeling on this kind of thing?
Well, it's an amazing find. Mummies are exceedingly rare, but they have so much information because they're so well preserved, usually. Just amazing amounts of insight into the cultures and how the people that lived during those eras and such, because you can see, you know, dental remains, you can see bones, you can see how their skin was. Mummies are also very well known for their tattoo work. So I'm wondering if there's any on this one. We'll see here in the future, but that's usually what most mummies are known for.
Yeah, and it's, well, you know, the thing on that too is so much of our knowledge of our own history comes through either documented or oral traditions, these kind of things. And like you say, it's rare to find anything really that you can actually document for sure what the situation was. And like we were saying in the intro, it's changed our understanding, the timeline, and this is not the first time this has happened. So like you, I'm going to be curious to see what comes of all of this when they publish some more of the research. And the tattoos are very interesting. I found this because that is something that's almost shared all over the world when you talk about mummies. Whether it's Egypt or Northern Europe or, you know, wherever, that's a big part of it.
Oh, yeah. Huntington's disease successfully treated for the first time.
You know, a lot of people are concerned about the march of technology, and there are some good and bad things about it, but the quality of life enhancements that we're starting to see, to me, are very important. And being able to treat diseases like this, which has not been able to be done in the past, as the headline would describe, is something that I think is a very good part of where we're headed with this. So Huntington's disease, for anybody that's not aware, is a disease that attacks brain cells. And the symptoms resemble a combination of dementia, Parkinson's, motor neuron disease, and some other things, all very unpleasant stuff. And it goes through families. And The team that has been going through this has come up with a gene therapy that can be given. It's 12 to 18 hours of delicate brain surgery. So that's, you know, kind of intense. But that being the case, it has a 75% rate of slowing progression, which is amazing, being that before this, nothing could really be done. The disease appears in your 30s and 40s, and is normally fatal within the following 20 years. So having even something that's 75% is really, really an accomplishment here.
Really is.
All right. Ring retinal vision? Is that a big deal?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a matter of us, you know, subject to opinion, I would suppose. What we're talking about here are ring cameras. And if you walk down the street in pretty much any neighborhood, everybody, myself included, has some surveillance cameras. In this day and age, it's good for security. Ring is a major manufacturer of these and is driving some new features that are very, to me, interesting and I think kind of a big deal. So what we're talking about here is basically integration of AI into the cameras. And there's going to be, I know already the feedback coming back is, oh, that's, you know, scary. And if used wrong, it actually very much could be. But where they're going with this is actually a little bit of a different direction. One new feature that you might have seen in your emails, if you have Ring, is something called Search Party. And what this is it's a AI-driven thing that if you lose a pet, right now a dog is what they're being used for, you can enter into the system that your dog has been lost, and then the AI can go through the Ring camera footage and see if it can find your dog. So,
what about cats?
Everybody seems biased towards dogs here. You know, being a cat person myself, I must object to that. No, I think, you know, I think this will be improved as time goes by, and I think they're just starting with dogs. For one thing, it's a little bit easier to see. They tend to be larger creatures, not all of them, but the other part of it too is cats do tend to hide and stuff a little bit more. So I could see where going for one part of the population first does make sense, but I don't think they're going to just do dogs. Ultimately, this will be increased to include cats, or I will complain about it. So, but that being said, some of the other things in here that might be a little bit more subject to debate on whether it's good or not is recognition of faces. So when someone comes up to your door, Alexa can actually answer the door for you and talk to them if you know them and, you know, would have that kind of information. So that's, you know, another part of this, but it is interesting to see where they're going with this. Now, you do have the option to turn all of this off. It's not required. You just go into your Alexa app or your Ring app in this case, and you have the settings in there to be able to tell it what you do and don't want to do. And I think for myself, something like the search party component of it for searching for dogs, I'm all for that. I'll leave that activated on my outside cameras. That will certainly turn it off on any inside cameras, but that's just me.
I agree.
Yeah. 3-win Nobel Prize for paving way for very powerful computers.
So this is for work on quantum computing. We've talked about this a little bit in the past, and this Nobel Prize in Physics is what we're talking about specifically here. And basically where we're headed is down a road of being able to use a type of computer that's very different from the binary systems that we have now. And diving into this is very much a topic of its own on how these actually work. But it is, needless to say, something that will make what we use today, if it's able to be produced and made workable, feel like you're, you know, working on your Commodore 64 in the 80s. Nothing wrong with a Commodore 64, but we wouldn't use it to browse the web today. And that same type of a thing. So the three winners will share the prize money of 11 million Swedish kronor, which is about 872,000 pounds. And, you know, it's interesting to see where all of this will go. I'm curious to see how this builds out and where we are going to end up. And the thing of it is we've talked about this too in the past, is Moore's law, that the number of transistors, so the capability basically of electronics, doubles every 2 years. And that does seem to be what's happening. But like the old saying, where if you have a penny and double it every day for a month and you'll end up being a millionaire, it's the same kind of thing. This exponential growth is really starting to show itself.
Mm-hmm.
All right, renewables overtake coal as world's biggest source of electricity.
Yeah, it's an interesting way that we've actually tipped that now. And energy demand continues to grow all around the world, especially with AI and some of the other things, crypto mining. There's a lot of things that are using a lot of electricity. And basically, solar and wind in a lot of areas are meeting this demand and are starting to drive a slight decline, but a decline for the first time in coal and gas use. So developing countries, especially China, led the clean energy charge. But richer nations, including the US and EU, relied more on fossil fuels. So it'd be interesting to see where this goes. I would think part of that is as developing countries are building out their electrical systems, they're not relying on stuff that they've already had in the past as much. So that's where we're seeing it there first.
James Gunn way overhyped the Peacemaker series finale.
All right, Gretchen, you've been watching the Peacemaker. What's your take on this?
Okay, so first of all, I never heard any of the hype. Okay, so when I read through this article, it kind of hit me like, oh, apparently there isn't going to be a third season.
Oh, bummer.
So you got this first season, you got this second season, and they left it with this horrible cliffhanger. And it was really upsetting. I thought that there was going to be a third season. And the idea that they're just going to leave him. This is a spoiler. So if you haven't watched the end of the series, I'm going to spoil it now. So turn your thing down and then wait for me to be done. he and his group, they reunite. They put together a wonderful new business. Everything's going great. And you know that the government guys are up to some kind of nasty, no good thing. Well, they grab the Peacemaker and they throw him through this portal, like an alternate dimension, and they leave him there. And he's in this wilderness area all by himself after he'd managed to get the girl that he liked to like him back. So it was really upsetting. And so I thought, okay, we've got a third season. Well, according to this article, there's no third season. That kind of sucks.
You know, it seems like with a lot of superhero stuff, you can never leave it on a high note.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, well, here's another bad thing. Cinnamon recall expands to 16 brands with elevated lead levels. And right now, everybody's getting ready to do their Halloween baking and their November Thanksgiving baking and then their Christmas baking. So, Bill, why is this happening?
Well, I wish I knew. Oh. And you know, the interesting thing is cinnamon is right now in front of everything, but there have been a lot of food recalls lately.
I mean,
frozen spinach was another one, I think, recently. And
I'm seeing it constantly. What's going on?
Well, it would seem like they're having problems with contamination in food. I know that's a really profound explanation of this. I don't know the details as to why. Well, but it definitely is something that's kind of scary, especially when you're dealing with lead.
Yeah. And yeah. I actually had a creamer product that mouse droppings I found on the sealed lid. So it was like, ew, you know, what's
okay,
going on?
Okay, tell us about that real quick. That sounds terrible.
Okay. I don't want to say the brand, you know, I don't want to cause a big kerfuffle, but I opened up there's a lid that goes on the top that you pop open. So you take off the lid, then you do like a secure lid opening. Well, it was on this secure lid opening that a mouse dropping was there. And it's like, okay, so how did that happen? So somebody's got to be really, really not paying attention. And that's not good.
Now that's
well, I remember back in, what was it, the 90s? They were having problems with the soda cans, the open crates that you could get. Remember those?
Mm-hmm.
Where it was like six packs that were stacked in there.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember they were having it with rat urine.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
But this is where there is a plastic piece securing the food. The feces was on top of that. And then another secure lid that you screw on top was closed over it. So the mouse dropping was inside. So it's like, where's this coming from?
Yeah, it didn't contaminate.
It had to have been at the factory. Itself, but
it, yeah, it happened, would have had to have happened in the factory before the lid was put on.
Yeah, and then unless, the idea that it was in the factory like that, it just made me gross out completely.
Yeah, really? That made you gross out? I most people wouldn't find that disgusting at all. Sarcasm sign. Oh my goodness. Oh. Well, to circle back to the cinnamon recall, there's 16 brands right now. The list is on the FDA's website, but needless to say, they're from all over the country and all kinds of different places. So it's definitely something you want to check out on that, as well as some of the other things like we just talked about that are going on. Gretchen, I'm going to ask you, don't say the brand, but did you at least report that?
Oh, yeah.
Did they react?
I reported it to the brand maker and the grocery store. The grocery store was kind of like, oh, we can't do anything about that. You know, okay. Because I didn't know where it came from. And right. I did report it to the brand maker, and they promised to send me, I don't know, some coupons to get new creamer, but I haven't, it hasn't shown up. So I don't know how seriously they took it.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, and that's kind of like when you go to a restaurant and something gross happens. Well, you can have your next meal free. Well, no.
Yeah. But, you know, at the grocery store, I now take the lid off and check to make sure there isn't any rat poop or mouse poop on my stuff. And then I close the thing back and then put it into my cart. It's like, yuck.
So anyway, when you're at the grocery store, the last thing that you want to do is have to deal with opening up your food and making sure that it's safe.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, having it over the liner is still better than having it in the food, but that's just something. I think that, you know, you ask the question, what's going on? What's causing all of this? Something like that would seem like a quality control issue right off the top. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so at the end of the day, there could be a lot of reasons for these type of things, but who knows?
Yeah.
Is it safe to fly during the government shutdown?
Well, you know, this question has been circulating because since the government shut down, they've been having staffing problems specifically with things like the air traffic controllers. And what's happening is during the shutdown, they're not paid. Now, in the past, usually they get back pay, although this time there's been some talk about some government workers not getting back pay. So a lot of them are calling in sick. It's not like they've quit or anything like that, but more like a sick out. And at the end of the day, it does seem to me that I think I would, if I had to fly, I think I would, maybe, but you want to be careful because when you have less staff, especially in a safety area like that, you can mm-hmm. have problems. Now, the biggest thing that we've been seeing so far is delays. This has been causing a lot of delays, and flight is still a very safe way to get around, but at the end of the day, caution is warranted, you know, and the thing of it is what makes it tough is there's not a whole lot you can do about it. If you have to travel, you have to travel.
Yeah.
And it's not like you can decide, well, that airport has less air traffic controllers, so I'm not going to fly there. It obviously doesn't work that way, right? So I think we need to keep our eyes on things. Now, I'm not aware of anything really bad happening yet. Just again, delays and cancellations, and they seem to be slowing down the traffic to a manageable level for the staffing they have, which is what's causing mm-hmm. that, which at least it's being addressed and taken seriously. Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's hard to say, but, I don't know. What do you guys feel? Would you, if you had to fly right now, would you?
Not unless I had to.
Yeah. Not if I had to.
So, I don't know. The comment was made that anyone heading to the airport right now is encouraged to pack their patients. And I think that is a very good suggestion, such that it is.
So are we going to talk about Marvel's zombies?
I'm feeling a little bit like a zombie right now. Yes. Why don't we? It sounds like a good segue.
Okay. All right. We were talking about the Peacemaker, which is, you know, is DC Comics, I believe. And Marvel, I've been watching a lot of like old, you know, DC and Marvel stuff just to have something to do. And I thought, oh, I'll watch this Marvel Zombies because it's getting close to Halloween. Well, it was really well done, but it was extremely depressing.
Okay.
And that was unexpected. Usually when I watch things that are like with superheroes, I usually find that uplifting and like a source of hope and joy and those kind of things. You know, even Batman wins at the end of the day, even though he's all broody. But when the superhero stuff makes you depressed, that's not good. It seemed a little too close to reality, where everything is just going wrong. And I wonder, is anybody else feeling this? And I guess this would be a good question for our pal Michael. The comic book guy, you know?
Yeah,
he's. What does he think?
It's going to be a good question to ask him. He's going to be back on next month talking about the Batman and the new Mr. Freeze movie coming up and some of the details there. And I think this is a very good question to ask because, you know, at the end of the day, if you are watching something that's supposed to take your mind off of other things and it doesn't, is that really a good thing to have? Or is it something that is problematic?
Well, I remember that I believe the comic book wasn't very, you know, uplifting either. It was very depressing and because everybody was getting turned into zombies.
Right. Oh, okay. So you've seen the comic books.
Yeah, I've seen them a little bit. Haven't read through them quite. I mean, I think it was years ago when I did.
Uh-huh. Well, the film version I thought was done fairly well, but it was one depressing moment after another. And, you know, the whole idea of superheroes, you know, you really want those heroes to win in the end of day, you know. It's not super fallen warriors. It's superheroes.
Super fallen warriors.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Just kind of like.
Yeah.
That was so true. I remember when I was younger, I used to really like He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. And, you know, I was like 6 or 7 years old, but there was an episode where He-Man didn't win. He did finally, but he didn't initially. And boy, was I depressed. Now, that can't happen. You know, that's not right. Yeah. What's going on? You know,
don't even get me started on the Transformers movie, the original one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sent kids crying home as Optimus Prime died.
Yeah.
And yeah. And the funny thing was, is the animators, they were just told, oh, it's just a product changeover. So that's why it was a new thing. They didn't realize how much of an impact it was going to have on, you know, the viewers.
Yeah.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, I just, Gretchen, I'm right there along with you. It's if you're going to walk away depressed, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And you're seeing this in some things, but even some of the wilder things that are coming out still usually have that positive ending, but apparently not all. All right, we're going to be talking about cybersecurity in the next segment. This is User Friendly 2.0. We will be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check out everything User Friendly at userfriendly.show. That is your one stop for submitting your questions, your comments, giving us your feedback. We want to hear from you. And you also can go there to play our back episodes. Check out Tech Wednesday. Download your smart speaker flash briefing app and anything else that is User Friendly. So check it out again, userfriendly.show. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and this comes around every year, and it's an important thing to consider because as our technology grows, we have a lot more in the way of cybersecurity incidents. So a few headlines that are out right now that illustrate this is one that came up is Chinese criminal gangs have made over $1 billion over the past 3 years by phone scamming Americans. Another one is different companies trying to take credit for guarding this stuff, CVE fallover and that type of a thing. Again, there's so many of these things going on that these different groups want to get paid for stopping it. But the reason that they're getting paid for that is because these problems are out there in the first place. And the question that comes up again and again is, what can you do about this? Well, as a computer user and that type of thing, there's always the classic, you know, keep your password separate, that kind of a thing. Use multi-factor authentication when you can and all of that. Then there's also the real world application. Now, I think multi-factor authentication is a must. In fact, if you're using a service that doesn't offer that in some way, I would question the service at this point because it does help a lot. It's not foolproof, but it does make it a lot harder. I know it saved our Facebook account a couple of times here, and we watch for these things. And that's just one for example. Some of the other things, the whole password thing, passwords are starting to become obsolete. And I noticed they're starting to implement some new systems to use biometrics and some other things that simply don't use passwords anymore. But it's going to be a while before that completely goes away. So while it would almost be impossible to really have a separate password for every service you use online, last statistic I saw is we have over 90 online passwords. That's about 2 years old. I think it's a lot more now, truth be known. But what you want to do is look at categories so that anything that's banking, healthcare related, that type of thing, the real critical information, do use separate passwords for those things. Multi-factor authentication, or as some of these services are starting to offer different kinds of authentication, get rid of the passwords. And then your other stuff that maybe is not as important, that's where you may overlap. It's not recommended, but there's, again, the recommendations and what you can actually do to be able to function in things. But if a password does get compromised on any of these things, especially one where you're using it on multiple sites, you have to consider the fact that it's not just the compromised site that you would have to update. It's everything else where it was using that password, because that's now out on the dark web and the bad guys are going to know to be able to look at some of these different things. That's a user's perspective. But what about a business? This is a big deal. It's not a matter of if your business is going to get compromised, but a matter of when. And these kind of things can cause huge, huge problems dealing with things like brand reputation, just cost of cleaning it up and that type of a thing. Your customer, you know, database or whatever gets out, whatever asset to you is important for your business. Usually it's your information that can put you out of business in certain circumstances. So to that end, there are things in place, just like you would have liability insurance or somebody slipping and falling at your property. There's cybersecurity insurance and different methodologies. And the biggest thing I think that really helps with all of this is educating yourself. If you're a business owner or somebody that's responsible for these things at your place of work, it is very important to take the time to look and check out the resources that are available to you, in a lot of cases free of charge, to see what you can do to minimize the risk. And to that end, the Travelers Institute has been presenting workshops for a long time now on these different topics. And as every year goes by, and as every year goes by with more cybersecurity incidents, the good guys are coming up with some ways to be able to cope. So with no further ado, let's go to the Travelers Institute and find out some of the things that you can do. Joining us now, Jessica Kearney with the Travelers Institute. Welcome back to User Friendly.
Thank you so much, Bill. Appreciate you having me.
So we've come around the calendar again, so let's go ahead and just dive right in. It is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Why is this important?
Yeah, so you hit it. October is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and it is a useful reminder for us all about the importance of cyber readiness and cybersecurity. Really, it's important all year round, but October is a good reminder for us to bring it to the top of our list and talk about. So, you know, if you're sitting in a business or an organization, do you have a plan in place to respond to a cyber incident at work? Do you know who to call? Do you know what steps you take? All these things that you don't want to have to decide right in the moment, right? You want to have a plan of action beforehand to be prepared. We know that cyber events can cause major disruptions to any organization. And in fact, cyber events were the number one business concern in our 2025 Travelers Risk Index among business decision makers from midsize and large businesses. So we know this is very important, top of mind. And that's part of the reason why our team at the Travelers Institute started a national cybersecurity education series, really a tour around the country in 2016. We call it Cyber Prepare, Prevent, Mitigate, Restore. And we really seek to help businesses tackle evolving cyber threats.
Now, the Travelers Institute has been on the road a lot since starting that educational series. Can you talk about this year's events?
Yeah, so we've actually hosted more than 70 events now, which seems so crazy to me, but we're very proud that we've reached that number. We've done 60 events in person, so folks have joined us in communities for lunch, and we've learned together, and we've hosted about a dozen webinars where people can join from all over the country. Our speakers are cyber breach coaches, privacy attorneys, leaders from the federal government, paired with our own traveler cyber experts, talking about the latest threats, offering practical advice on how you can increase your cyber readiness. And this September, we're hosting a program in St. Paul, Minnesota. We just hosted a program in St. Paul, Minnesota. In just a few weeks, on October 20th, we're going to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And that few weeks is going to go by very quickly because that's coming right up here. Can you give me some examples of the data? Let's talk St. Paul and Tulsa since it's coming up and elaborate on what you're seeing there.
Yeah, so before heading to each city on our tour, the Travelers Institute conducts a survey of local business owners in the area to ask them about their cyber hygiene practices. So just a few examples of what we found. In St. Paul, our survey found that 78% of businesses require employees to regularly update their computer passwords. So right, baseline, good practice. But less than 60% actually train and test their employees regularly on data security. So some room for improvement there. And your listeners can kind of judge where they fit into some of those equations. In Tulsa, where we're going to be on October 20th, we're looking forward to seeing our business partners there. We found that a little more than half, so 55%, use multi-factor authentication, or you might hear it as MFA, which is a really great tactic for securing your data. And that's a little lower than some of the other cities we've mentioned. And I'll just say for MFA as a sidebar, it's a security method that requires you to use two or more authentication factors to basically verify your identity. So think about the text message that you have to get in your phone to log into your bank account, things of that nature. Just gives you more assurance that you are who you are, even if your user ID and password has been compromised.
Now, I also see that around 52% of business leaders in Tulsa reported that they have cyber insurance and 56% in St. Paul. Why is having cyber insurance so important?
Yeah, so we encourage companies of all sizes to talk to their independent insurance agent and broker about cyber risk in general. And cyber insurance is definitely one of those key parts of that equation. So it can cover anything from, you know, forensic investigations to figure out actually what happened, make sure it's not still happening. Litigation expenses associated with a breach, regulatory defense expenses, fines, all of these things. Many cyber insurance policies now actually also have pre-breach services to help businesses avoid the incident in the first place. That's a really great development there. So some of them actually also offer cybersecurity assessments as well as employee awareness training. So some really good stuff. So our advice is always to talk to your independent insurance agent, give them an understanding of your specific business because it's definitely not one size fits all. So have a good conversation there.
It's great to know as Buco Bucks. Thanks for that. Let's take a quick dive into the 2025 Travelers Risk Index, which looks into the minds of business leaders across the U.S.
Yeah, so each year, Travelers publishes our risk index, which surveys more than 1,200 business decision makers at businesses of all sizes across the country and kind of get a feel for what their concerns are at the moment and how they're dealing with day-to-day risk. And according to our latest results, which we just released at the end of September, cyber risk continued to rank as the number one business concern among small and medium-sized businesses, as I mentioned at the top. And for the ninth time in 10 years, cyber victimization has actually increased. So more businesses are falling victim to cyber events, with 25% now reporting cyber breaches and 60% of victims being hit multiple times. So this is just some good color and statistics for you there. More than 20% said that their company had not taken some of the really basic protective measures that we'd recommend. So things like using a firewall or backing up your data or requiring those password changes.
So when you think cyber attackers, I've got this idea of some, you know, guy in a cloak in a back room somewhere wearing an anonymous mask. But who actually are the cyber attackers and what do they want and who specifically do they target?
Yeah, so cyber attackers can be from criminal organizations. They can be from state-sponsored attacks targeting infrastructure like banks or utilities, or even a category of activists who break in for social or political reasons. Any business that has access to customers' personal and financial information can be a target, even if you're just simply storing your employee data. So that's something really important to keep in mind. So if you're accepting any sort of digital or credit card payments, or your employees use computers and mobile devices in their daily work, and who doesn't, this is something that you should be thinking about.
And something on my mind as a business owner myself and many others, what are the costs of a cyber attack? I mean, what does this hit?
Yeah, so I kind of alluded to some of the areas before, but a single breach can result in some really significant costs. And it's not only the damage limited to your lost data, so you have to factor in interruption to your business. So will you still be able to operate? Will you still be able to open your doors, or how long will it take you to open your doors back up? There are the forensics costs, which I mentioned earlier, the cost of notifying people who have been affected, and even more intangible things like loss of customer confidence, right? Like, you have to think about, do people feel confident enough in your business that they're going to come back next week and keep coming back the month after?
So what do you propose to business leaders to help protect their organizations against these inevitable, and they are inevitable, threats?
Yeah, so this is always my favorite part to talk about, because these are the really practical things that people can do today, tomorrow, this week. I mentioned multi-factor authentication earlier, and there's a few more practical steps I'll mention. First, make those system updates when they come out, right? Those little updates saying, you know, now you need to update your whatever the program may be that you're using. And I know they always seem to pop up at the most inconvenient times, but they really cannot be ignored. The most common way an attacker gets into your system is by exploiting a vulnerability that's already known and they know it's out there. I'd say also, second, back up your data. So know what data you have and save copies of those in separate files in separate physical or even virtual locations. So you could use an external hard drive or cloud backup, for example. And some of the data you may only need to back up every month, but there might be other data that you have that you really need backed up on a daily basis. So you really have to make that call for yourself. And then actually go through the steps of pulling up your backups, using them, getting them up and running and functioning. Make sure you know what that process looks like. Make sure you know how to troubleshoot it. And just most of all, make sure you can confirm it's actually working.
So there's a lot to this. Where can people go for more information?
Yeah, so you can visit our website, travelersinstitute.org. We also have a podcast, the Travelers Institute Risk and Resilience Podcast, and we've got some good cybersecurity content on there.
That sounds great. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Appreciate it.
So please send us your questions on anything cybersecurity related. Jessica's going to be joining us a little bit later, probably beginning of next year, to answer some of your hot seat questions. And these are very important topics, and something that the more that we can learn and educate ourselves, I think the better it will be to have a situation where, again, it's not going to be eliminated, but it's like putting the bigger lock on your front door. Hopefully the bad guys will go to the next house. All right, let's go ahead and switch topics, or as they might say, now it's time for something completely different. And let's talk about Dungeons and Dragons, and specifically third-party resources, because this is becoming a big deal. Now, a few years ago, Bill, you and I had an interview with Arcane Eye, which I believe is a company that publishes these type of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to just throw the ball to you. Let us know what's going on.
Well, I wanted to talk today about, you know, I've talked a lot about official stuff from Dungeons and Dragons and from Chaosium, and which does Call of Cthulhu, not D&D, but there's a lot of third-party resources out there for RPG games that don't really get talked about very often amongst people. And today I want to talk about like Heliana's Guide, which is a great, huge, massive resource for adding monster hunting and using parts from monsters to create magic items and things like that. It has a number of hunts in it, which are like little mini camp, you know, one session campaigns. And it really just brings a lot to the table that is kind of missing in your normal standard D&D books. And then there's a supplement to that one, which is Larceny's Guide, which stands alone on its own, which is just a book of magic items that is amazing. They're both by the same publisher. And I recently got another one called The Crooked Moon, which is put out by Legends of Vantress, which is a 640-page campaign setting and a campaign in it. And plus it has resources for new classes or subclasses, new races. And it just, there's so much out there that is third party that some of it's, you know, I mean, not great. There's actually a bit of an issue right now that they're on like Drive-Thru RPG and DM's Guild. There's some authors are generating AI slop, so to call it, you know, little eight page things that are definitely selling based on the cover art, which are, you know, buxom women. And it's just AI junk that really isn't necessary when there are so many really great creators out there. Like I've said, the Heliana's Guide, Legends of Evantress, that company does great stuff. There's really just so many things. Even Fool's Gold, which came out last year, is a campaign setting and campaign that was just phenomenally well done. And these books you can get online. You can get a PDF or a hardcover. There's just massive amounts of resources through different places that you can get them. And I mean, so really, if this, you're...
Go ahead. Is this something that really helps out the DM?
Oh, yeah.
You know, these kind of... Because I would imagine that's a pretty difficult job to do, to be the DM.
It is.
For the game.
Yeah.
But I mean,
would say that without question. Anyway, go ahead, Bill. I was just thinking about a few things when you made that comment.
the point I'm trying to get across is no matter what you're trying to go for in your campaign, there might be a resource out there to help you do it. Right now I'm running a campaign based off of Gulliver's Guide to Beastworld, which is a wonderful resource as well. It's mostly a campaign setting. There is a little bit of a campaign in it, the book, but it really brings a world to life. And then I added in Heliana's Guide and Larceny's and such, and even Ryoko's Guide, which adds kaiju battles, which are very unique, interesting. I mean, fighting, you know, giant monsters.
Yeah.
That are, yeah, so you're attacking parts of them more than you're attacking them. And even recently there was Void Sea, which came out, which is doing some very wonderful things on naval combat and Eldritch pirate stuff. So Lovecraftian piracy. So there is, like I said, there is a just wide range of whatever you can think of, there might be a resource to help you with.
Now, cool. I think like anything else, it's, you know, go on and check it out. And like you say, there's some very, very good things out there to be able to pull from. And Bill, I'm going to ask you a question that's sort of on topic here, but it is something that we get in from the listeners. Do you today, because you run a lot of games and play a lot of games, we all do you use and do you prefer digital or written reference material? Like, in other words, a physical book versus something like D&D Beyond?
I use both. It's very common for me to have a game open and have a number of PDFs open so that I have those resources. I have physical copies of many of the books. Some of them are big, so I have them on a bookshelf next to me so that I can reference them pretty quickly if I need to. It really depends on what I'm doing with it. If it's a quick reference, I'll probably grab the book. If it's a longer term reference, I'd probably have it open during the game as a PDF. I don't use D&D Beyond. I have because of problems with OGL stuff and things like that with Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast. So that's a personal choice.
I'm going to quickly insert something for anybody that hasn't heard about that. Is this has been kind of an ongoing thing that they've supposedly tried to fix with their licensing agreement. But basically, at one time, if we had created characters in D&D Beyond, and Bill, correct me if I'm wrong on this, we wouldn't have been allowed to talk about them on this show because the intellectual property rights of our characters would have belonged to Wizards of the Coast. Am I basically on the right thread there?
Or if you were a third party creator or anything like that. I mean, it was very troublesome. They were targeting some very specific groups of creators. and they were targeting creators and such that they wanted to monopolize on, is my opinion.
And, you know, on this topic, I know one of the other things that we get a lot of feedback on, too, is this idea of, okay, I have my AD&D, you know, D&D collection of books, which I've always used, and now a few people want to use D&D Beyond, and now I have to rebuy all of this intellectual property within the digital format to be able to make the characters, because otherwise it won't include the traits that are in the expansion books that I already own. Is that a correct statement?
Especially with D&D Beyond, yeah. They want you to buy digital copies of everything. There are some basic stuff that they give out for free, but let's say I wanted to use stuff from Eberron, I'd have to rebuy that book. If I wanted to use the 2024 rules, I'd have to rebuy that book, even though I had the original 2014. They nickel and dime you, just to be honest, on D&D Beyond, and you know it is a problem with sunk cost fallacy, you know, that, you know, if you put in all this effort, are you going to keep using it? And I like Roll 20, and I've put in a good amount of money, and some of my friends have put in a good amount of money for me. And, but as a, you know, as a website, I prefer it, and we just use it. So luckily that is a benefit, but yes, I had to rebuy some of the books that I already have.
Wow.
Now, I've noticed on Roll20, though, at least in the experience that I've had with it, is it doesn't seem like you have to. They have them available for purchase, character sheets, all the rest of it, but you do have the ability to create your own stuff or use your own information. Now, maybe that's not the same for all games, but the ones that I've had experience with, we haven't really had that problem. It's available if you want to buy it, but you don't have to.
Having run multiple systems, I've never run into a problem where it was locked down on Roll20. D&D Beyond, yes, I have.
So just something to take into consideration. Let us know what you think. Do you like online or the old-fashioned pen and paper better? And what do you think of third-party resources? Userfriendly.show is your place to send in your questions. We'd love to answer them for you here. Next week, we're going to be doing our last look back for the year. We're going to be looking at robots as they were a year ago. And then next month, we're going to be giving you some updates on all of these different types of technology to see where it's been, where it is now, and potentially where it's going. Until next week, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
Hey, everybody. This is Bill Snodgrass. Join User Friendly in supporting the people of the Ukraine with President Zelensky's United 24 campaign. Help is needed with healthcare, demining, and many, many other things. You decide where your support goes. Go to userfriendly.show and click the Ukrainian flag at the bottom of the homepage for more information.
User Friendly 2.0 Copyright 2013 to 2025 by User Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, Privacy Notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.